Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
There's Lindegaard making Forrest back pedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris. He's found him via the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil.
Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Madden, after just 6 minutes, gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott. Goal!
Hello and welcome to the last Glovers cast of 2021. We're seeing out the new year in some fashion tonight. We've got Mr. Ben Barrett.
Good evening, fine gentlemen.
Elliot Watts is with us.
Good evening.
And the pharmaceutically challenged, freshly jabbed Moderna, Mr. Dave Coates. How you doing? Are you okay? Are the chills setting in yet? Are you
chills and the the hot flushes and everything? I don't know whether this is just my age or whether it is anything to do with being pharmaceutically challenged, which does make me sound a little bit like I'm now Breaking Bad, but there we go. But I'm nice to see I'm relegated to fourth now. Well, Watsy has even kicked me out. So
well, I think there was most of the conversation was about you and your jab, so. If anything, you're the headliner rather than
is that it? Yeah. On the grand finale.
Yeah.
Right, I'll take that.
You're the Foo Fighters of this festival.
Wow.
How was everyone's Christmas? Happy Christmas, all of you.
Happy Christmas to you too, Ian.
You had a good one? Are you recovered from it yet?
Fine.
What weird stuff did you eat at Christmas, Ben? There's got to be something.
Oh, yeah.
Got to have like peanut butter and turkey or something like that.
I hate peanut butter. Nothing particularly weird.
And how was the ham?
Good. Not overly cidery, which I didn't want it to be overly cidery, but it's got a twang, which is nice.
So can we have that ranked against the Fanta and the Dr. Pepper hams?
The best one is still the plain Coca-Cola, then the Fanta, then the cider, then the Dr. Pepper.
Have you ever done anything with cherry in it?
No, but cherry Coke is apparently quite good.
Yeah, I'd heard. Yeah, I'd imagine cherry Coke to be. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Isn't Dr. Pepper a bit cherry-y?
Yeah, a bit more aniseed-y, I think, yeah.
Okay. You know, you're in that weird bit between Christmas and New Year where Ben's rocking out a ham on top with a random fizzy drink next to it.
I like that you call cider a fizzy drink. Normalising alcoholism here.
Elliot, did you get the bins out?
Completely missed the bins last week.
No.
Forgot to put them out this week when we went away, but the bin man did come and get them for us. So it must have been flavour of the month for the bin man. It was a shambles down this way. I was watching what the old people were doing, and even they didn't know. So
it's a double bank holiday. It throws you off. Normally it should be pushed back 2 days, but it was only one day.
And there was me being all clever, saying on Twitter, it's for no one else to miss the bins, and I missed the bins.
Like the final day of Glastonbury Festival in your garden, was it? Just like litter, just strewn everywhere. Empty tents.
Cans of cider. Not
yeah, exactly.
Empty packets of ham, yeah. Should we talk about football?
I want to know what your Christmas first, Ian.
Oh, yeah. Mine was good. I've been busy. Started decorating a room.
Yeah, what's that all about?
Yeah, well.
Why did that happen?
Well, we're moving the boy into the bigger room, so I've now got to find a new home to podcast in. Painting it a lovely shade of green, which actually, that reminds me, I've got a colour for the Chris Angelo's colour team, because the colour Freddie has chosen is called Warm Eucalyptus, so the Paul Warren Eucalyptus.
Yeah, leave that one where it is, shall we?
I mean, I could probably, if I need to go back and look through all the Valspar colour charts, and then we'll, you know, we could come back with hundreds. We'd have a squad.
There'll be a best in there somewhere, isn't there?
Yeah, probably. Probably.
My best.
So, Torquay, one of us was there. How are you feeling about it, Elliot?
That's why I'm here, isn't it? Torquay was. Not a good afternoon, actually. Wasn't a good afternoon at all. Wasn't pretty on the pitch, wasn't pretty off the pitch. I didn't really know where we want to start with it. If I was to describe the Yeovil team that turned up and the Torquay team that turned up, they obviously thumped us. 3-0 was a good win for them. But if we remember that Weymouth game that we played against Weymouth, the first derby we played against them, and we turned up bang up for it, and Weymouth didn't look like they wanted to be there, and their manager at the end didn't realise that it was a derby, that was probably a bit of us last weekend. They out-shit-housed us completely. Completely. For a team who does that to everyone else, for every one harsh, solid tackle we put in, they put in five. They are flying in. And we just didn't really look like we wanted to be there. I think the run of games maybe had got to us a little bit. The expectation had probably become a little bit too much, but they just wanted it so much more than us on that afternoon that we couldn't really compete with it. They were just taking lumps out of us. And good challenges as well. The ref didn't give us much, to be fair. I think that was quite apparent. The pitch was pretty dodgy. And we had the red card, which you could say changed the game when we were getting into a little good spell. But it was petulant. As Darren Sol said, it was a cynical thing to do in the minute he did it. You knew that if the ref linesman had seen it, he would go for it. So, yeah, not a pretty afternoon.
Is it a derby? Do you call it a derby?
Boxing Day derby.
Do you think?
If you're playing them at Christmas, you should be up for it, and we weren't, were we?
No, certainly not.
I think the part of the world we're in, we get so few derbies, really, that, you know, Plymouth will be a derby if we get to play Plymouth. It's
not a Weymouth. It's not a big game, is it? But they had a decent... decent support out for them, and they were just bang up for it. They were so up for it. I mean, I know they thumped us down there at Christmas last year, and they just did the same to us again at the weekend. The red card, you could say changed it. We didn't take our chances though. I could start with Youssef, for example, and I'm not sure if we'll see Youssef start this weekend or not. I'll be interested to see where it goes, but a lot of people have been sort of likening Youssef to Ishmael Miller, Jermaine Thomas, as being the kind of player who walks around, doesn't do a lot for 90 minutes sometimes, but he'll get two goals from two chances. He had two clear-cut chances at the weekend and not a lot else, and both of them were fumbled pretty poorly. If you want to be likened to that kind of player, you've got to take your chances. especially if they're going to be few and far between in the game. If that's our sole striker and we're relying on Youssef, we need to be seeing the goals. But then I wasn't at the game before, and supposedly he was unplayable. So it's one of those, isn't it?
Do you think that's why he's at this level? Because of his inconsistencies? Because what we've been told from, you know, he got a half-decent move to Blackpool at one point. I know he didn't play for them, but he got that move off the back of a bit of consistency. Do you think that actually, if he was playing at his highest ability, he'd be slightly higher than the National League? It's just this distinct lack of consistency that gets him going. Because we said on our WhatsApp chat that if that first header goes in that first half, it's an entirely different game. An entirely different game. And moments like the red card and that chance are the things that make those games pivot.
Yeah, he comes and goes in games, doesn't he, as well? And he goes missing for massive periods of games. It felt like at Torquay, if Youssef wasn't offside, he was fouling their player. And apart from those two chances, he couldn't get his foot on the ball, hold it up, be that hold-up man for anyone to run off him, because he was either offside or committing fouls where he'd lost the ball. And that could be a little bit of, again, Torquay were banging up for it. Their defence weren't giving him the time of day. But it's... wasn't keen on the ambling around type that we were getting out of him, especially in the second half in front of the away fans, sort of ambling from side to side on the pitch. And that then he has the one chance that falls to him and he heads it away from goal, not straight into the back of the net. And you're right, Ben, that's the inconsistency, that he's got two heading chances there. He should be taking at least one of those, at least.
Maybe he's not as good at heading as he is as good at kicking. He's had a few headed chances. Was it at Solihull? Was that a headed chance that he
missed on the
stroke at half time?
Right under the bar. I have no idea how he missed that.
And, you know, he put the ones against Woking. He put away, you know, was oozing with confidence. Mm. The two he scored.
That goal against Eastleigh was a good finish as well, wasn't it? Again, we're not with his head.
Struck it on the swivel, didn't he? It was a fantastic goal.
Yeah,
maybe he's not good at heading the ball.
Like Thierry Henry. Thierry Henry could never head it, could he?
If you're playing, he's not quite Thierry Henry then. If you're playing him as a target man, you've got to be taking those chances. You really, really do have to be taking those chances. Yeah. But across the pitch, it doesn't just fall on his shoulders at the weekend. Across the pitch, there was two out of sevens, three out of sevens, maybe. A team who just lacked that. I don't know if we got a little bit scared after the first 10 or 15 where they were flying in to tackles and going in two-footed. We just didn't know how to handle them. We really didn't. It only looked like from the start one team were going to win it, I felt.
We said on our last chat, didn't we, that first 15 minutes would set the tone, and how I thought Torquay were susceptible in that was first 15 minutes. Is it a simple case of someone somewhere at Torquay, possibly Gary Johnson, has figured that out and gone, right, we need a big first 15 against a side who are good at the first 15? Is it that simple? Is someone just spotted a tactic and tried to counter it?
You wouldn't put past Gary Johnson, would you? They started so fast, they started so hard, and they kept that throughout the game as well. And I used that phrase earlier. They completely outshit us. Completely. I've sworn twice now. I've remembered to frame any further, refrain from any further swear words.
It's done now. It's fine. Keep going.
You'd imagine they were coming off the back of a rocket as well from going out to Tonbridge Angels in the trophy. You can't imagine he'd have let them have an easy week off the back of a defeat like that in a tournament that, if they're not going to really get involved in the playoff hunt, would probably have been a half-decent chance of silverware for them. Then...
They're not the most consistent side either, though, are they?
No, God, no, they're not. And that's why, in a strange way, I'm not overly concerned about... I'm sure we'll talk about this weekend's game in a little bit more detail, but I'm not massively concerned of, oh, God, it's Torquay again. Because it's a bit Jekyll and Hyde, isn't it? Torquay are good, and then they go and get dumped by Tunbridge Angels, and then they go and beat Stockport, and then they struggle to beat Barnet. And, yeah, they're a bit hit and miss at the minute.
Last year, they beat us 6-0, didn't they, on Boxing Day?
6-1. Sorry. Albie got one. Don't forget Albie's one.
And then they came to Hewish Park a week later and we turned them over, didn't we? They're not They're not the most consistent side. They're not the same team they were last season. Definitely not. We could definitely turn that around this weekend without a doubt.
You say they are an experienced side, aren't they? Because like you said about the shithousery, you look at we got five yellows and obviously two reds. Obviously, one of them was after the final whistle. But and you were saying there, and it's what Sheridan and Sam were saying on the commentary, there was every much, bit of intensity from them as there was, you know, bad tackles and all the rest of it. They were going for it and we were going for it. But we got five bookings and they got none. So that tells you that this is a team that knows what they're doing and they can beat. And you look at the sending off for Low Everton, that I think it was Lapsley, the number four. He got mentioned quite a bit on the commentary. He knew exactly what he was doing, didn't he? Because he clattered Sonny. And then immediately when the ball went back to him, he's there like nudging him from behind, isn't he? Just trying to wind him up. And he got exactly what he walked straight into the trap, didn't he?
I don't know if it's clear on the video. He stood on Sonny Blue's foot. He stood on his Achilles. And that's what those kind of teams do, don't they? They just know how to get in the head of you, what they're playing for. And he stood on, I could see from the away, and he was physically stood on Low Everton, but Low Everton's kicked his leg out for all to see, right in front of their home fans, who are right behind the linesman. I don't know if the linesman can see it or not. I don't know if the linesman could see a flailing leg go behind. He was quite some way away and it was the wrong side. The linesman to then call the ref over and say he needs to go for it. I don't know. But you don't do that in front of their home fans, do you? So it's a silly mistake to make. But he's a young lad, isn't he? He'll learn from that.
And he did exactly the same thing Dale Gorman did against Barnet a few weeks before. Went down like he'd been shot through both kneecaps. And then he was straight back off again. And I noticed Josh Staunton was having a good word with him when the red card was handed out. So maybe that one will hang over till this Sunday and Josh will remember him.
I was a big fan of Staunton getting in his face on the floor. Got to say.
I thought you'd like that one.
Big fan of that. But... exactly. If it's your team, you're not going to complain about it, are you? Mm. We did the same in the Barnet game the other week. Yeah. And the ref had a bit of a stinker. Don't get me wrong. The ref didn't. I don't want to sort of put it on the ref's shoulders that for the reason that we lost. Because looking back on it, it's a justified red card, isn't it? Some of the yellow cards, some of the decisions that went against us maybe weren't so fair. But that's just football, isn't it? We needed to do more on the pitch. We can't just put the sole blame on the ref's shoulders.
I've got potentially, I'm not sure if this is breaking news. I don't know if this is news or even breaking news, but I just hit refresh on the FA discipline website and Sonny Blue Low Everton's ban has disappeared.
Da, da, da.
So Dan
Ben is the only person with access to this webpage as well. Nobody else in Britain can get onto it except Ben.
So Dan Moss is still there. A foul tackle, one match ban. Grant Smith, offensive language, law 12, S6, two match ban. And that's it.
What do you reckon he said? Because I've heard offensive stuff said on a football pitch a million times and you never get a red card. Or very rarely is there a red card. He must have said something pretty offensive to get a red card after the fact.
On a scale of one to Materazzi to Zidane, how bad was it?
See, I've had the discussion with Coates already in the week, and we haven't seen what's happened whatsoever. But at full time, Ruben Reed's gone over to their fans who were in the corner, and I'm sure we'll get onto the subject in a minute about what the Torquay fans were up to on Sunday afternoon. But he's gone over to them to tell them to calm down. Now, whether Smith at the same time has gone and said something or shouted something to them, I'm not aware. But it seemed that the handshake still happened. Grant Smith was in front of the away end, and the ref spoke to someone and then ran the length of the pitch to red card Grant Smith. It wasn't like it was in an exchange of words between the two that may have been perceived between people. The ref has literally ran from the halfway line to Grant Smith. And because we've been watching Ruben Reed, who was telling their fans to calm down in the corner. And I thought the ref was coming to red card Ruben Reed, who was stood with Grant Smith. And it was a little bit confusing who'd even been red carded at the time because Reed had been over to their fans and the refs just ran half the pitch, red carded Grant Smith, and ran back again. And Smith was shouting back at him, but what was said, don't know. Wasn't obvious for anyone to see, but it wasn't that it happened in an exchange sort of on the halfway line where they were shaking hands at the end or anything like that. So the belief of some people when we were walking out is he'd also said something to the fans and the steward had gone and told the ref. I didn't see that because I was focused on what was happening with Ruben Reed at the time. So it was all a bit of a shamble.
It sounds mad.
It was a mad 5 minutes. Their last goal goes in, and then you've got the added time, and then Ruben Reed's obviously heard what their fans have been saying or singing in the corner, gone to tell them to shut up. So it's not like that's not been noticed either. So whether that had come at the same time, whether something had been said with it, I don't know. I couldn't possibly say. It was all bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, you know, when you look, if you look at a game and you see that one team's had 5 yellow cards and 2 red cards and another team's not had any cards, you know, there's no conspiracy or anything like that, but you have to think, hang on a minute, how is this game, you know, what has happened in this game for one team to get all of, you know, all of those cards and the other team to not get any? And I think, you know, we're not allowed to talk about the refs, but you have to question. Yeah, you have to question. You know, you have to question these things. And when, you know, what you've just said about him running half the length of the pitch to red card someone when he didn't witness anything or see anything.
He quite physically did as well. Yeah. It was quite obvious for all to see. He was running back over to do something. I thought it was going to be for Ruben Reed for going over the fans, maybe a yellow card, yeah, and to pack it in or something like that. And pulls out the red card and runs off again. To make it make sense.
Dear,
to make
dear.
A note of his name. Scott Jackson, wasn't it? We'll note his name down for next time you play. Refs us.
He's not had a great afternoon, but neither have we. So the whole emphasis can't be put on the ref.
What score are you giving him out of 7?
Maybe a 3.
A 3? That's still that's middle ground, isn't it?
That's not middle ground. Middle ground's 4 coats.
3.5 technically, but let's not get into decimal. Not tonight.
I'll be interested if they have rescinded that red card, because I mean, you guys have seen the video back. What do you think?
I think he knows what he's doing. I think he knows he's putting his foot behind him to try and trip him up. I don't think he's trying to kick him. I think, you know, like when you kneel down behind somebody who's walking backwards. he's just trying to leave a leg there just to go, oh, sorry, mate. Didn't see you there, bud. One of them. That's what I think he's left with, which is probably a bookable offence. Unsporting behaviour. It's not a red card. Scott Jackson, by the way, on referee stats, has refereed 2 Yeovil games this season. He's awarded 3 red cards. The other one being for the Stockport County defender, Palmer.
That was him, was it?
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he booked
Grant Smith in that one as well.
Come for afters. I know. I think when you look at what happened with Del Gorman in the Barnet game the other day, it's a similar type of situation. I think it'd be hypocritical for us to complain about it. If it's rescinded, then happy days. I'm not necessarily sure it should have been. I think Sonny's got a lesson to learn. You know, it smacks of Beckham in 98, doesn't it?
I wasn't happy with him, was he?
No.
Are you going to appeal the appeal then, Ian? Are you going to say, no, he's got to learn his lesson?
Yeah, tomorrow at the press conference, I'll say, Darren?
Yeah, send him to bed with no tea. Yeah.
Talk about, I don't really want to go too deep into the crowd controversy, but Torquay put out a statement condemning and that they were going to be launching an investigation into the chants that took place, all very unsavoury regarding Lee Collins. What was the sort of atmosphere, the reaction from, you know, Yeovil supporters when they heard that type of stuff going on?
Ready for me to be on my whole high horse or no?
Yeah, yeah. Talk, you were there. Tell us exactly what.
We didn't hear it.
Okay.
Not hear it. Some people in the way and supposedly did hear it. There was no reaction whatsoever. Me, everyone I stood with, didn't hear a thing. Not saying it didn't happen. It quite clearly has happened. There a lot of Torquay fans have come out and said they heard it at that end of the terrace. But at the same time, Yeovil fans were being a pretty derogatory or a select number. And it was only the minority were being pretty disgusting towards the Torquay goalkeeper. And I said pretty publicly, and I remain at this point, sort of Torquay need to do their own thing and sort that out in their own way. And us not get involved in that. That's Torquay's fans. And I'm really pleased they've come out and sort of approached the subject head on and said, that's not acceptable here. We need to get our own house in order, because this isn't the first time this season that this happened with our fans. Some of the comments that I heard made me pretty angry in the away end on Sunday afternoon. And words were exchanged and people were told in no uncertain terms that it's not acceptable. And those people who are making those remarks to goalkeepers on a weekly basis need to have a long, hard think about whether football's placed them, because some of the stuff that was coming out of their mouths on Sunday afternoon was just awful. It was some of the worst I've heard from the Yeovil fans. And let's slide down, because it's only 2 or 3. And we've got a really good fan base at the moment. We travel well. We're one of the well-supported teams in the league. Look at when we were on telly the other week at Huish Park and the noise that was made. Why do they need to go and do that? Sort of. I'm not even going to repeat some of the remarks that were made. You can go on my Twitter and see the remarks that were made, or a couple of them at least. Bang out of order. I hope Torquay did tell us that their names would be passed on to the club, or pictures of them would be passed on to the club, and it had been noted what had been going on in the away end. I just think if you're going to go to a football game and make personal remarks to a player on the pitch, when we're a club who we know how that feels, like if another team's saying that about Lee Collins and we're all sort of want to be against that, why is it acceptable for us to do it to another team? And it's absolutely not, and it needs to stop.
Yeah.
Kind of a lot more to that, really. Must do better. Everyone must do better.
We must. And I don't want to be on my high horse about Yeovil and Yeovil fans and be like, it's got to stop. But it absolutely has got to stop, because we can't be the pot calling the kettle black if our own fans are up to it as well. If that keeper's heard those remarks being made by our fans at the weekend, then they're well entitled to go and report us to the FA as much as we are them.
I think Darren Sall spoke about it after that Yeovil game, didn't he, where there was that report of something said to Adi Youssef about, people just feel like it's right that they can get away with saying anything. We all know we're all on social media. You see it all. And I know Ian asked us not to get on our high horses, but I don't think this ain't a Yeovil Town problem, is it? It ain't a Torquay problem. It isn't even a football problem. It's a society problem, isn't it? That no, you don't even know where the line is anymore. There used to be things, and this make me sound like I'm a million years old, I know, but there used to be a time where, you know, there was a line that, you know, you can't say that kind of, you can't say it. Just doesn't seem, well, collectively, we just don't seem to know where that line is anymore, do we? And it's easy to, you know, demonise football fans and say, oh yeah, they're the ones who are doing it, they're the ones. But there's plenty of people, I mean, bloody hell, we've got a Prime Minister, haven't we, who says racist things and sexist things and homophobic things. And I'm not saying that Torquay United fans know who Boris Johnson is and that's why they do it, but you get the same thing on social media, don't you, where somebody makes a comment and then they got all followers and likes and all of that, and it's like rewarding people for saying things and doing things. So yeah, not to get too big picture about it all on on a Friday morning or whenever you're listening to this, but there needs to be, I think the thing is, there needs to be a strong voice, doesn't there, amongst, you know, football. And like I say, you got to give credit to Torquay for, you know, their fans apparently responded to whatever it was said. The club has responded to whatever it said. And like you say there, what's if Yeovil fans are saying things to other Yeovil fans, that's the kind of thing that we've got to do, isn't it? That people have got to feel that they've got the backing to do that. Because it's, you know, against some people, you know, I'm difficult to believe looking at the size of me, but I'm not a fighter. So if I if I went steaming in there and saying, stop saying that, what's to say someone's not going to like smack me in the mouth or something like, you know, you've got to feel like you are entitled, that you've got the backing to be able to go in there and do that, and something's actually going to happen.
Yeah, so and I'm
got to police ourselves.
I'm really pleased and proud of the people who did point out at the weekend, because it needs someone to take the first step to say, actually, no, that's not acceptable. Why do you even think that's funny? For other people to actually realise, yeah, maybe I shouldn't be joining in with that. Maybe I shouldn't be going along with that. Or maybe next time I hear it, I'll call it out as well. And if we can just think about our own behaviour as Yeovil fans. Look, I'm not saying don't go to games, sing, make noise. Like, I'd be an absolute hypocrite if I sit here and say anything like that. But the derogatory marks need to stop. I mean, keepers aren't, well, I'm not even going to say the word, but I think we all know what people have been saying about goalkeepers on a weekly basis. And it did stop for a while after it was called out quite publicly. And you would have seen it was called out quite publicly again at the weekend, but in the sand as well. And that's the first step towards making a bit of a difference and making these people think twice about if they're going to do it in future.
There you go, Ian. We said we weren't going to get on a high horse.
Yeah,
can we move on from that part of the afternoon? As yeah. I said, it was an awful afternoon on and off the pitch.
Should we talk about the return fixture then?
We look forward to another awful afternoon.
Well, no, I mean, at these talky double headers, obviously we missed out on Weymouth, which was disappointing. I was quite excited for that one. Be interesting to hear what the manager thought about having the game off and whether he was pleased with an extra day or so training to keep him out of the spotlight. But what do we think? It's the double header with Torquay is always, it's a bit of an interesting Christmas now. Like last year we had the terrible result and then we turned it round. The year before we did them over twice. What do we think is going to happen at the weekend, and who's going to go in goal?
What are you doing on Sunday? You got any gloves?
I am no taller than 5'7".
Yeah. Well, the public have spoken anyway, haven't they? 73% of our listeners, 73% of the 100 and something odd people, over 100 people we voted.
Wow.
Say Max Evans is going in goal, or should go in goal. Ben voted. You were Team Max, weren't you?
Yeah, I'm Team Max. I mean, if he's good enough for the Woking game, he's good enough for Torquay. And I think he's probably going to go and go for Bournemouth as well. And do you know what? Good luck to him. Go for it. My only concern actually isn't with Max himself. It's what's on the bench. Because you wouldn't want a feisty first 15 minutes, Danny Wright going through and goal. And you don't want an inexperienced head thinking, this is my chance to really make a stamp on a game and to clean out a striker through on goal and go, oh, actually, now we haven't got any goalkeepers. And similarly with Bournemouth, it can, you know, take Danny Wright out and change him for Dominic Solanke. And this is my moment on the telly to make an impression at a big stage and take my chance. A little rush of blood to the head. So I hope Craig White's chatting to him and making sure his head's screwed on, because he's going to need to be screwed on. Big couple of games for him. And he would have been prepared for this. He would have known that, in fact, I believe Darren Sall said a number of weeks ago, we'll need him in the league at some point because Grant Smith kept picking up yellow cards. So I think he's already said in that little comment there that he's ready to give him a chance. He's had a couple of games. I know we're talking Somerset Premier Cup and Woking as well, but even that Woking game, Hewish Park, people behind him, fans cheering him as he puts his towel in his goal mouth and things like that. So he'll have had that little tiny bit of experience that might have just bedded him in for a game like this. It's a huge game. It's a huge game. And he's going to need his defence to be rock solid in front of him. But we've been fairly rock solid with the exception of Boxing Day this season. So for me, Max Evans, your time's come. Best of luck. Go well, son.
There he is. There it is.
To start applauding there.
No, well, Coatsy, you were on the other side of the coin. Certainly, wow. You wrote that you were on the other side of the coin. You didn't have two separate columns written, did you, for each result?
No, I didn't. No, I hadn't predicted that Grant Smith was going to get sent off for something we're not even sure what it is now. No. But I think I probably made an opinion, but for the benefit of the content, perhaps, because we could have two columns saying the same thing. But there, I do think there are some valid points that I made there about the sort of impact that, you know, a drubbing could have on Max Evans. And and some people said, well, Torquay and you know, the cup game are both free hits because or whatever. I'm not sure Darren Sowell does free hits, does he? I think he's one of these people who wants to win absolutely everything that he can. So, I mean, my concern would be that if we did get another 6-1, you know, we did get Danny Wright ghost demon into Max Evans in the first minute or whatever, and then he gets a bit wobbly, lets in a few. As you say, if you have if Dominic Solanke's playing against us, then that's a strong side that Bournemouth are putting out on the TV. Can see, and I don't think there's nothing that makes me think that Max Evans isn't capable of doing it. And the other thing I'd say about bringing in loan keepers, I don't know what loan keepers there are out there. I mean, I'm sure there are some number twos or number threes out there that are kicking their gloves. Or kick it, they don't. Do they kick their heels, goalkeepers? Yeah, maybe banging their gloves together or something, thinking about what they could be doing in the second half season. But is anyone going to come for two games? I don't know. I think there's reasons why you'd want to protect Max Evans, but equally, you know, could be his moment, couldn't it? He could swim just as much as he could sink.
Yeah, and, I think.
No, nothing I've seen of him makes me think he's going to sink. But
I think sometimes when you've got a backup keeper who hasn't played a lot, or you've got, you know, a keeper that doesn't look physically imposing, or perhaps, you know, isn't, you know, ready. Whereas before we've had keepers that don't look ready. Max Evans, physically, like size wise, he looks, you know, he looks like he could be a first choice keeper. This isn't like, you know, an under 18. Rezzy just warming the bench for the sake of it, or isn't, you know, is part of the group just to kick the ball at your first choice. I think he's got something about him which, you know, I don't think we should not feel confident with him in goal, but I do think Sunday is sort of a bit of a benchmark test to see where he is, and then maybe that will help us make a decision, perhaps. I don't know, like you said, if we do get spanked and there's a few Ricks in there that aren't particularly good, then maybe we do need to be on the phone to someone to see if they can send us a keeper for 30 days.
I'm pleased that our goalkeeper looks like a goalkeeper, first of all, mate. That's an ideal starting point. I think, rather than turning heads at Max, defence needs to stand up and be counted, don't they? We've got one of the best defences in the league, so we think. With Wilco in there, we've been solid, absolutely solid. We had a slip at the weekend, but a slip can be a slip. They're going to need to stand up, and if they've got Max behind them, they're going to need to. They've all played their debut. They all know what it's like starting a league game for the first time. It's a little bit harder when you're in goal and the pressure's on. But actually, they need to. Rather than him guide them through the game, they need to guide him through the game and be solid in front of him. And if he's solid, we've had games where Smith's done absolutely nothing this season.
Yeah,
we've had games where he's not needed to pull off a worldly save. He's not even featured at times. Like, he's a fantastic keeper, but where we've got a fantastic defence and an excellent holding midfielder, he's not really needed to anything some games. So this is their chance to really, really pull themselves back together. And I think we might see, well, we're going to have to see a couple of changes, aren't we, first and foremost. What's everyone thinking about those changes? I've got mine in mind.
We're going to miss Dan Moss, aren't we?
Big time.
I mean, I think Alex Bradley goes in there.
Yeah.
Is that as set in stone as people think? He didn't even make the squad against Tottenham on Boxing Day. Wasn't even on the bench.
What happened with Alex Bradley?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, he's not done anything wrong, right?
No.
Is he just dispensable from the bench? I thought he had
the attributes of being able to play in three or four different positions. So he was handy to have on the bench. We've seen him at left wing. We've seen him in midfield. We've seen him at the back. We've seen him come on for 2 minutes and get a booking out of nowhere just to waste time. We've seen him do that, but we've seen him start against Woking and did okay. But not on the bench at all. Two left backs on the bench, but no Alex Bradley. Be interesting to see, hopefully. Hopefully there's someone at the Gaffer's presser tomorrow that can ask him about Alex Bradley and whether or not this is his chance to shine. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, slap in the face, Ian Perkins.
That changes my thought process, because might we see Morgan Williams move across to that side?
Well, again, Morgan Williams, great point. He kept two left backs out the squad. You know, do you have to make that change, or do you play one of Barnett or Headley at right back?
I'm not sold on Morgan Williams at left back still.
I think it worked for the times that it worked, but did it get found out a bit against Torquay? I mean, you were there. Did it get found out a bit?
Felt like it being found out. It was crying out for Barnett to come on at half time. I thought Barnett and Knowles would sort of feature really early into the second half. We didn't see either of them. Obviously, I run Jordan Barnett's fan club, as you know, so I was crying out for him. but I thought we'd see him both feature quite early. Again, Knowles, sort of, I found that interesting that he wasn't back in the side at the weekend as well. He had the concussion, of course, and he had a game out, and then he was back on the bench pretty soon, wasn't he? Couldn't find his way back into the team there at the weekend, which I thought was interesting.
I think with Sonny out, or he may not be out, we don't know. I think there's probably, you know, room for Knowles to come back in and reclaim his place. Based on what you said about Addy on Sunday, do you think there's, you know, more of a preference to play the best back to goal striker in English football, or would you stick with Addy for this one?
The best back to goal striker.
I'm just working that into a hashtag now.
I was thinking earlier we could see up to five changes at the weekend. Now we're saying that Alex Bradley wasn't on the bench, which I'd forgotten about. I'm not sure if we will. I was thinking Evans for Smith, Bradley for Moss, Barnett for Williams, Knowles for Lou Everton, and Reid for Youssef. Not that I'm Reid's biggest fan, but Sal is a fan of him, isn't he? So I think we could likely see him. I'd love to see Knowles run off him at least.
I think regardless of whether or not Sonny is available, I think Knowles comes in. Knowles and Wakefield go back to what was so good for that short period of time. They set each other up for goals against Woking in the league. Yes. Oh, yeah, I was there. so, yeah, I think those two definitely come together. I do think Alex Bradley comes in. He's the most natural, unless somehow Mark Little is ready, in which case I'd even question that he should be starting. I think he'll have to be bedded back in the same way Reid is going to be bedded back in. But Bradley's the only natural one, unless he goes for a complete change and we tactically change and go three at the back and play wing backs.
You love calling for a three at the back.
I don't love calling for a three at the back. This is fine. I'm quite happy with a 4-3-3. But I'm saying for the players that are availability, does the three at the back, Williams becoming the third central defender, not suit a bit more?
I mean,
we did Barnett one side.
Who's your wing backs?
We talked about this for Wrexham, didn't we? The teams came in and we thought it was three at the back, and then we started and Morgan Williams was left back.
Yeah.
So
that worked out well, though. That worked out well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Really well. I don't think we have wing backs without Bradley. If we don't have Bradley at right back, we don't have a wing back.
Yeah, true. He's the only one that makes any sense at that right side, doesn't he?
Because we don't want Worthy there again, do we?
No. Well, no. No, you don't.
And do you want to make five changes in the team that's being pretty consistent? I don't know, because you're putting some massive games in there. I mean, we know the keeper's got a huge game ahead of him. If Barnett comes back in, he's been kept out the side. That's a massive game. Knowles would need to stake a claim to reclaim his pace. I don't know if it could be a good thing, but it can sort of fire back. We saw that with some of the times that Johnson used to tinker the team too much and it would sort of backfire a little bit. I'm not sure you'd want to make five changes, but we could see.
Just talking about this feels like I wish we'd played Weymouth just to get it over, get that game over and done with, and then, you know, you don't have to think about it. But I think it feels bigger because we've just lost to Torquay and now having to play him again with that game in between. It's a bit like second leg revenge Champions League.
Can anyone remember last year how different the teams were on Boxing Day to New Year? Can anyone remember?
Stand down, I'll find out.
I knew Barrett would.
I haven't had flash scores open. Okay, on Boxing Day. On Boxing Day, and I'm going to have to go alphabetical because flash scores doesn't care about the National League enough to put them in positional order. Smith, Dagnall, Dickinson, Hunt, Leadbitter, there's a name, Lee, Osho, Quigley, Skendi, Sanupe, and Warburton with Diaz, Duffus, Knowles, Palmer. Palmer?
Harry Palmer, wasn't it?
Goalkeeper, yeah, on the bench.
And Worthington on the bench. That was the 6-1 loss. And then the absolute scenes of the 90th minute winner in the second tie.
How'd that go again?
Absolute scenes. Scenes with a Z. Neufel 87 and Wilkinson. Oh, was that Neufel? Was that his debut?
Might have been. Hunt debuted against Torquay, didn't he?
Right, yeah. So it was Smith. Bradley came in, having not been in the squad on Boxing Day. Diaz started. Dickinson started. Duffus started. Those two came off the bench. Hunt, obviously, was still in. Charlie Lee was still in. Josh Neufel started, having not been in the squad. Skendi started. Wilkinson started. And Worthington came in. So the bench saw Dagnall, Sanupe, and Warburton all drop out for Diaz, Duffus, and Worthington. Who did Bradley come in for?
Leadbitter,
who wasn't even in the squad because he was utter tosh.
Are we saying that was five changes? Sounded very much like five changes.
And a Smith in goal. Oh, gosh.
We did have a game in between that game, didn't we? Did we have Aldershot on the Monday?
Yeah.
Where I think Neufel might have come back in for that game, didn't he? Because I'm sure he came on as substitute against someone. Like, right, I can't remember where it was. But, yeah. We beat Aldershot 3-0, I think, in that midweek. The one in between Christmas and New Year.
Yeah. So. Does anyone else really miss Courtney Duffus when they hear Courtney Duffus get read out on a team sheet? He's a type of striker we miss so dearly.
Yeah, he wasn't the best back to goal striker in there.
No, but he was very good front to goal.
Yeah, he could. He was very promising, wasn't he? Sort of, he could do something.
Should we take some questions? Is there anything else we want to?
Forgot Quigley got sent off in that Aldershot game. In between 90th minute, got sent off for a second bookable offence.
It wasn't after the final whistle for saying something undisclosed to somebody, was it? What?
I'm just looking at it. It was pretty much after the final whistle.
Was it?
Yeah.
There you go. Wasn't the same referee, was he?
Oh, that would be freaky, wouldn't it?
That would.
I'm going to check.
Right.
It's quickly back. Ben goes in. It's quickly back. Training.
Somebody might have to ask tomorrow. Ian.
Could we see quickly at least feature on the bench?
Well, who's the bench then? If we go with your 11, who's the bench?
Well, there's no keeper.
Well, is there? Or do we stick an under 18 on there?
I just don't think there's a keeper.
I mean, we're not sure if we should stick with, we're questioning if we should get a loan or stick with the subkeeper because of playing in the league. Now we're saying we could do an under 18 keeper on the bench as well. Could we do a loan keeper to just sit on the bench? I don't know.
No, I don't think. Well, We could have a bit of depth, couldn't we?
If you've got enough players to bring five changes in, there's at least a bit of depth.
So if we go with your team there, Elliot, your bench is Morgan Williams.
Jaheim.
Morgan Williams. Toby Stevens and Ollie Haste. Is it not? Have I missed anyone?
Well, Yusuf.
Oh, yeah, quick. So the other Yusuf. One of Yusuf, the other one of Yusuf and Reed, Morgan Williams, Stevens, Haste, under 18s keeper. Have I missed
potentially
anyone?
Potentially Low Everton if he's not banned.
Potentially Low Everton if he's not banned.
Potentially Quigley.
Potentially Quigley.
Potentially Mark Little.
Potentially Mark Little.
Potentially he's looking Headley. Like a good prospect, isn't he?
Headley.
Yeah, Jaheim Headley, yeah.
Headley. No one's asked about him. I don't know. I'm not really like what is a Jaheim Headley?
He was on the bench at the weekend, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he started the first game in the trophy, looked all right, set up a goal, played all right, but then dropped out altogether. And you're thinking, okay, I'd like to know a little bit more about him because clearly he's got a bit about him.
Don't know, we do this with loans, don't we?
Yeah. We don't really, we come in, we don't talk to them, we don't ask anything about them, and then they disappear and you go, oh yeah, he was a thing.
Right, I've got the questions loaded.
Go for it.
Chris Angelo of Green and White Goals. We have been lucky to have had a lot of success in recent years. Not that recent. Which
I was going to say, how recent are we talking here?
Which season has given you the best memories? FA Trophy in 02, Conference in 03, League 2 in 2005, or the playoff runs of 07, 13? Dave, you go first, mate.
I'm going to have to go for the oldest one, aren't I, of the three. But they're probably the second half of the season we got promoted out of the conference. So I think I'm right in saying, I don't think we lost the league game in the second half of that 02-03 season.
No, our last loss was on Boxing Day.
Was it? There you go. Yeah. But we lost to we lost to Bursko in the FA Trophy, if I remember rightly. So, yeah. Which was the only game we lost. So yeah, I'd have to probably say that one, and just because that team was so amazing for the level that they were playing at as well.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that watching that team as a 11, 12 year old. Was like unreal.
Yeah, all right, yeah. So young, okay, fine.
It was well. Imagine how much fun it would be now. Yeah. Right? Back then, it was unbelievable, and it really did feel like they were our like Premier League team. They were so like embedded in the community, and you'd see them around the town, and they'd come into the schools and all this sort of, you know, stuff that little things that go a long way. It was just really, it was a special time. But I'm sure people had that for the others as well when we were doing well. I sort of think I see the conference in 03 and League 2 in 05 almost as like the same because, you know, that it was still a lot of that team. It was just an improved, you know, those players all came with us and they all improved and they got better with us. And it sort of just felt like the natural progression of the team rather than separate moments for me.
We had another great run in that 05, around Christmas as well, I think. I remember Swansea. We beat Swansea on New Year's Day at Swansea, which was, we had a great run around that time.
That was that 2000. So I've spoken a few times about how the final of 2002 was kind of a game that cemented me as a Yeovil fan. I'd been before, I'd been a few times, I'd understood, but that kind of, that was it. That was the point. And so 2003 was almost a bit quick for me to truly appreciate, as ridiculous as that sounds. And I look back now and think, Jesus, we were good. That side was fine for League One, and it was a conference team. And so I almost don't feel like I appreciated it enough at the time. 2007 for me, just the playoffs were the memory. We were good throughout the rest of it, but I can't really recall more than four or five games throughout the entire season, looking back at it now. For some reason, I can really remember us beating Gillingham on the final day with half a squad. Danny Webb scored, of all people, because I went there and we played literally half a squad. Craig Alcott made his debut. I remember that.
But going back before that, I can't pinpoint the big games during that thing.
It
but
just felt like we were in the playoffs, didn't it?
Yeah, just, it was just fine. I seem to remember with 2013, maybe it's because I was a bit older and I was experiencing it happen in front of me and appreciating what was happening. I felt it a lot earlier. I felt it from, well, I've said this before, I felt it from that Scunthorpe 4-0 with Gosiugwu bagging a couple that I was like, hang on, this is something. These are a team that we need to hang on to here. So for me, it's 13 for the whole package, which might surprise a few people.
I'm going to say the same. Second half of 13.
Just
after the Christmas.
Yeah, that run was ridiculous.
Just unbelievable, going everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm fancying chances. And I felt a bit like that recently of this season as well, turning up places and thinking, we're going to beat these. We're going to do these. But they're a playoff side, but that's all right. We're going to beat these. And I've not felt that since that season.
Mm.
I'm the same with you, Ben. I think I appreciate it more because I was that little bit older. Yeah, it's just time of our lives, wasn't it? That sort of 6 months, just going everywhere and just pumping team after team after team.
Yeah.
And you just knew that we were going to win the playoffs. Just knew it.
Yeah, it was strange, wasn't it? I remember playing Swindon on TV about 3 weeks before the playoffs. And we were in the playoffs. They were just outside the playoffs. And it was quite a big game. Sky had obviously turned up. And we got battered. We got absolutely battered. And I remember thinking, oh, that might be massive. And then about 3 days later, we pumped some other poor schmuck. And actually, now we're fine. We're absolutely fine. And it didn't matter who we got in the final. It didn't matter that it was Brentford. Brentford, whisper it quietly, Brentford were a better team than us. And they were a better team than us on the day. But yet, it really didn't matter because we were going up and that no one could really stop us.
And I say it time and time again, losing that first game against Sheffield United, you knew that we were going to turn them over when they came back to finish, but you just knew it. 100%.
Everyone walking out of Bramall Lane, that's fine. We'll score at home. Don't worry about it. We'll score. It's fine. It wasn't even a consideration, was it? And even the sort of off-field stuff, like, it wasn't a question. We were going to Bury dressed up as frigging leprechauns. How do we get a leprechaun suit? And how do I get it delivered tomorrow? Of course we do. It was the fact that Dan Byrne got himself tactically yellow carded to miss a game that he didn't want, so that he could afford to miss a game that didn't matter, so he could be available for the playoffs. It was those little bits. We were switched on early doors to the prospect of the fact that we were getting promoted and no one could do anything about it.
There we go. Good question.
Very good.
We went off on that one, didn't we? Dan Johnson, you can only sign one permanent, Sonny Blue or Moss. Which one and why?
Dan Moss.
Why?
He's ready now. Sonny Blue Low Everton needs a couple more years before he's ready. Consistently. We've seen so many little flashes of him, the way he set up the goal for the FA Cup, the way he had just shows little flashes every now and again. Dan Moss does it for 90 minutes, time after time. If we had half a sniff at Dan Moss and we didn't take it, I'd be absolutely fuming.
Yeah, wouldn't disagree. We've got more players that could fill in for Sonny Blue as well, whereas I don't think we have that. Although Alex Bradley, we just mentioned, Mark Little, obviously see how his injury comes back on. But even with a fully fit Mark Little and a fully fit Alex Bradley, I'd pick Dan Moss over them, I think. Whereas Sonny, you'd say, well, you've got, you know, Wakefield and Knowles that can come in that kind of a position.
Moss feels like a big game player as well, doesn't he? Feels like we haven't put a foot wrong on a big game. Like when we were on the telly the other week, that was one of the best performances I've seen at Hughes Park for years. He's got all the hallmarks of Aylin when he was first. Yep. I think he's probably a level ahead of Aylin when we first had him.
Absolutely spot on. I thought that at Wrexham a little bit. How mature he was. That Wrexham performance was as good a defensive single person performance as I've seen, I don't know, however many years. To be that vilified and for everyone to hate him and for everyone to want him sent off and for every Wrexham player to boot him back into England, I thought he was outstanding.
Can I just say I didn't hate him? I was all right with him.
Yeah. There was 103 and two others in the press box that didn't hate him.
All 105 of us, yeah.
Yeah.
We thought he was great.
There was about 8,000 people who were baying for his blood. And
We've just been talking about that League One season there, and he's exactly like Aiden was that season.
Yeah, yeah. He's different gravy. And if Millwall don't see it and they want to get rid, we'll have him.
Extend that loan.
Extend them all, by the way. And I chucked Jack Robinson in there as well, because he was outstanding at Solihull. Outstanding. When both teams were down to 10 men and we were really under the cosh, he was outstanding. I want all three of them for longer, for the rest of the season.
There we go. No arguments here. Here is Hugh. Of our sequence of lone keepers we had during the EFL years, which struck you as A, the best when with us, and B, has in your opinion gone on to be the best in their subsequent careers?
Jeez, we had some good ones, didn't we?
Best he was with, when he was with us, Stephen Henderson, although he was probably the one who went on to fail in his career after that, because he never really did anything. And the one who's gone on, you probably couldn't look past Begovic, could you? Although McCarthy, I'd imagine Begovic probably played more games at league games.
Begovic is the only former Yeovil player to win the Premier League.
There you go, yeah. Yeah, so I'd say Stephen Henderson was... He beat Huntingdon to all the awards, didn't he, that season?
He was quality, wasn't he?
Stephen Henderson was great.
Absolute quality. You thought he'd go on and play Premier League for 10 years, didn't you?
Yeah, but he didn't do anything, did he? Did he go Portsmouth? He was at Bristol City. He was from Bristol City, wasn't he?
Is he Charlton's third-choice keeper now?
I think he's still playing somewhere.
What's he up to on Sunday?
Yeah.
There we go.
Good point.
What about Hennessy for going on quite well? Can't leave him out the mix.
It's tricky with Hennessy because he was already good.
Yeah, but he was Wales' number one goalkeeper.
But we loaned him up.
Yeah, I know.
He was the third choice keeper in League One.
Yeah.
That was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Henderson, God, I forgot how good Henderson was. That Sheffield Wednesday 2-2. He must have had about 8 arms and legs.
Were you at the Stevenage game where Aylin played his first... That Aylin and Henderson might have both played their first games that day, and Aylin handballed it on the line and Henderson saved the penalty?
I think me and you travelled down, Dave.
I was going to say, we've been
we
to
held
Stevenage
out for 0-0, didn't we?
Yeah, I think me and you travelled down, Dave. I think we did.
I remember going to Stevenage a couple of times. We were driving to Stevenage with you a couple of times.
One time we lost 1-0 and were horrendous. And we said about 2 words on the way back.
Yeah. I think Bonzingala was playing that day, if I remember right.
I think that might have been Stetch saved that penalty there. I think it might have been Stetch in an Aylin's first games.
Was that Stetch's first loan game before he became ours properly? It might have been. I do seem to remember something similar. He's got to enter the conversation, hasn't he? He was a lone keeper in the EFL days. Marek Stech, how outstanding was he?
But do you think he peaked with us?
He probably did. Yeah, to be fair, he left us for the Champions League. Let's not be around that much.
He came back pretty quick, didn't he? And it he hasn't did. Really done it. You know, he hasn't.
What's
really...
he doing on Sunday?
Yeah, there we go. There's another one.
Got so many goalkeepers for Sunday now. I don't know what we're going to do with them all.
No. Good job. We've got loads of room on the bench, isn't it?
Yeah.
I expect Craig McCann to be able to answer that question of if it was Henderson or Stetch, but I'm sure it was probably Stetch saved the penalty.
I mean, they were both outstanding. They really, really were. Stephen Henderson will go down as one of the most underrated goalkeepers of our time.
Wow. In football.
of our time. Of the Yeovil. Yeah, without question. Yeah. Because of the quality that we had in and around it. I mean, yeah, geez. We had a couple of stinkers. Remember Richard Martin getting lobbed from about 40 yards at Oxford in the FA Cup?
Josh Wagner.
Hey.
I won't have a word said about the nicest man.
Careful.
Canadian football.
I tell you who was good but never really got much of a shout out.
Apart from Ollie Johnson,
I always rated John Sullivan.
Johnson. Yeah,
I can agree
with that.
He's a big money Las Vegas realtor now. There you go. Fun fact
Ben,
for you.
Ben was waiting so badly to shoehorn that one in there, weren't they?
Yeah, he was a good keeper though. He was a very good keeper.
That's Scott Flinders.
Scott Flinders always played so well against us, not so much for us.
Who was in goal?
Liverpool like a million times.
Yeah. He was always outrageously good against us. Same with Scott Loach. Scott Loach always plays well against us. Came to us for about 3 weeks and then was shocking.
Who was in goal for United, the first United game?
Jed Steer.
He was good. Keeper. And he went on to... He's at Villa now, isn't he?
Yeah.
There's been some good keepers.
Yeah. We have had some.
I think we spent a lot of time talking about goalkeepers here.
Yeah.
We have been graced with good keepers and great fullbacks.
Yeah. We've been graced with not buying...
Don't get Elliot talking about fullbacks.
We've been graced with not buying very many good first-choice goalkeepers, so we've had to loan so many in the EFL days. And the irony of it all is when we really did well is when we had a permanent goalkeeper that was ours.
Arthur Krijak?
Marek Stek.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, sorry.
Steve Mildenhall.
Wheelie.
Oh, yes.
Wheelie. They were all ours. That's the first thing you need, I think, to build a good winning side is a keeper that's yours for...
Well, we had a great number two with Collis as well, didn't we? Mm. We could do with one of those right now, couldn't we, Ben?
Well, maybe we do.
Another great Collis.
We'll find out on Sunday. Tuppence, did you ever own the special edition Subutio set released circa 1993?
Elliot doesn't know what Subutio is. The baby-faced assassin here is going to say, oh, what's the beauty? I don't even remember. Sega Mega Drive, that's like my earliest memory. No, I didn't have the beauty. I had the beauty, I think. I don't think I had the Yeovil Town special edition.
No.
I've been triggered of a memory now, hang on, about Terry Skiverton, or was it Darren Way? One of the managers was asked about Yeovil being either a big club or an attractive club or something. At some point, I'm going to have to find it. I'll find it and we can tweet the link out. But he said, of course we're a big club. We're the only non-league side they made Subutio for. And left it as that. That's what that meant. That's what memory that question is dragged up for you there. No, I didn't have the set either. I was 5. Don't be silly.
I'll keep quiet.
In the style of Roy of the Rovers, what would the title of this year's annual be called? If the story was about YTFC. So this year's annual, that's from Rich Wilcox Smith.
It would just be, the front cover would just be a picture of the Antonio Conte meme, wouldn't it? Just one normal day of Yeovil Town, please. That's all I want.
Roy of the Rovers and the lost owner.
The mystery of the lost owner. Yeah.
Who's in charge here?
Can I speak to the manager, please?
Yeovil Town and the one-way ticket to Turkey.
Okay, we'll move on from that. We've talked about Max Evans. Hopefully we've answered your question. Gareth Aspinall asks, favourite Christmas snack, Christmas football highlight, and which cracker would you like to see YTFC bring into the squad in the new year? And we've updated the listeners on Ben's cider glazed ham rather than Spam. Oh, favorite Christmas snack. Everyone go. Dave, you first.
Stollen bites. You ever tried them? Stollen? It's like German pastry, isn't it? I'd never tried them before. Never even heard of them before. Your mum brought them up. Yeah, they go down. I give them a 6 out of 7.
And now they're your favorite. First time ever. Wow.
Yep. Stollen bites. It risen straight to the top.
Okay. Elliot?
Playing games here. Next, go on, Perkins. Sue, you, go.
I've gone for Elliot. I said Elliot.
Right. I've eaten so much over Christmas that I just can't even decide which my favourite's been, to be honest.
Not sure this kind of on the fencery is acceptable.
That is very much on the fencery. I'm struggling to think of all the things I've eaten.
Do you know what? I love a really high quality tin of shortbread that you can only seem to get, you only seem to get them at Christmas. You know, they've got all the festive, I'm looking at one right now, like screaming at me. Great shortbread.
I'm partial to a Danish biscuit tin.
Okay.
Yeah, big fan. And a Labuschen. You heard of a Labuschen? You can find it like it's a European.
I've heard of a capuchin.
No, it's not a monkey. It's a Labuschen or a Labuchen. It is like an Eastern European don't know what you call it, almost cakey, biscuity thing. D-bloody-beautiful.
D-beautiful.
D-beautiful.
I had some Lindt hazelnut chocolates that were out of this world as well.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. Like
anything hazelnut's good.
Yeah, Lindt as well. Lindt's elite chocolate, isn't it?
Correct.
Okay, Christmas football highlight.
Can you count the FA Trophy game as Christmas? That was what?
No.
No. Well, then there isn't one, is there? Because yeah, our footballing Christmas has been getting spanked 3-0 at Torquay.
Yeah, there hasn't been a highlight yet.
No.
Which cracker would you like to see YTFC bring into the squad?
A Jacob's cream one.
Very good.
There we go. Thank talking cheese and biscuits there. How about a fully fit Joshua Neufeld?
Oh.
If such a thing exists.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes.
And Diaf. And a Lawson Diaf.
Yeah. A fit.
Yeah, fit firing Diaf. Fit firing Neufeld.
Do you think we'll see a fit firing Lawson Diaf ever again?
God, I hope so. I really hope so.
I don't want
Courtney Jeffers.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be good. I wouldn't want to introduce Diaf into our squad right now with suspensions and, you know, having to bring him in because, shit, we need someone to play. I'd like to have him come in when things are a little bit more comfortable. If we were to have him back in and not risk, you know, look what happened to him last year. And that was because we had no one else and he wanted to play and we had to play. So
we've obviously kept him around the place for a reason. We have plans for him. You didn't keep a player who's pretty injured, out of contract, around the place, presumably paying for a treatment, might even have some kind of contract with us. I don't really know. But you don't keep him around the place for no reason. There's a future at Yeovil for Lawson Diaf. And on his day, Lawson Diaf's too good for the conference. Too good for League Two on his day. He's unbelievable. It's just his day has been so few and far between because of injury that we probably haven't seen the best of him since he's been there. Could we see it? I'd like to hope so. But it's going to have to be a steady recovery because he's had a long time out of football, hasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah,
I can tell you that the BBC co-commentary gig doesn't pay very well either. So he ain't making his fortune with his side hustle. So, yeah.
I did have a Christmas highlight though, which was Wilkinson and Staunton snarling in the Torquay player's face. Then Wilkinson walking off laughing, and obviously I was cheering that. That was the only highlight I could pick out of that game.
Fair. I mean, I saw Adi Youssef going into Marks and Spencer's this week. That be a highlight.
What's he? Tell us about your almost brush with fame this evening.
Oh yeah, well I could have got an answer to what had happened. I was out for a walk earlier and I saw in the distance Grant Smith was getting into his car. If I'd been a minute earlier, I'd have said, "Hey Grant, I'm on the pod tonight. What happened at the weekend?" And we could have got the lowdown. So if I find out, if I see him around the place, I'll ask.
I like that all you'd have had to said was the pod and he'd have
known. And then he'd sworn in your face and driven off.
What you should have done is ran up to him with a yellow card and then ran away.
He'd know the pod.
And Clevo, we'll finish off with this question from Clevo. Let's finish with what are your highlights? We're not going to talk about the lowlights because that's all a bit grim. Highlights of the year, and what do we foresee 2020 going for YTFC? The crystal ball.
Quadruple. All four of them.
There we go. We're going to win the FA Cup. For those who don't know, the conference, the FA Cup, sorry, the National League, FA Cup, FA Trophy, and the Somerset Premier Cup. Going to Ben, what's your highlight?
If I'm allowed to be just a bit personal, the Wrexham game was a big day for me personally, professionally, and what a performance from the lads. That was a performance that made me fall in love with this lot all over again. And there wasn't a lot to love about last season, so it does come from this season. Stockport was potentially a one-off performance of amazing. Wrexham for me was, Jesus, actually this lot are good. So for me, it was Wrexham and all it did for me personally and all it did for for the group that we've got at the moment. And 2022, yeah, quadruple silver.
Elliot?
I think the year started really well, didn't it? We weren't there, unfortunately, but we actually all but ended Torquay's hopes of promotion. They fell to pieces after that, didn't they? And then they lost out in the playoff final. So I think that was a cracking start to the year. Games we've been at, though, can't really beat that Tuesday night down Weymouth when we beat them on penalties. If you're going to win the tie, if you're going to make it hard, win it in a real crap penalty shootout where you give them every chance possible to win the game. Yeah, I think that was probably a highlight for me, going to Aldershot as well and beating them there. And like Ben said, I didn't have high hopes for this team at the start of the season, but actually they've done well so far. They're falling in love with this lot again as well.
Any
and that's what will hurt quite as much at the end of the season, won't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I hope it kills you.
What's your crystal ball telling you, Elliot?
I think we're going to go all the way in the trophy.
Yeah,
I think we are going to go all the way in the trophy. Definitely.
That'll be fun. Coatsy, highlight. What is in your crystal ball?
Right, I know you're already trying to predict what's in my crystal ball, aren't you? But the I'd have said the winner at Stockport just because it was so unexpected. Because, you know, yeah, okay, so you can win at Aldershot and things like that, but Stockport were a very, very, very good side, and we just knocked him out of the park. But then when Watsy said that about Weymouth, obviously I wasn't there, but watching those earphones come off that steward's head when Tom Knowles' penalty smacked him on the Swede. That was quite amusing as well. And in my crystal ball, I think in terms of the league, I still don't think we've got a squad that's good enough to get in the playoffs. I think we'll finish outside the playoffs. But I have written here, finalists in the trophy and win the SPC. So, but I say finalists in the trophy. I think we'll get to the final, whether we win it or not. Obviously, depends who we're playing, doesn't it? But I could see us doing that. But the silverware is definitely the SPC. That's the one we're all interested in, obviously.
That's the big one.
Ben Jarni to score in the final. And Ben to run on the pitch.
Which final? Ian, you can have both an on-the-pitch crystal ball and an off-the-pitch crystal ball if you want.
My highlight is just being able to go back to watch football games again.
Mm, yeah. Take that for granted, didn't we?
You know, Hewish Park is not the nicest place to go, but it's my not nice place to go. It's our not nice place to go. And to not be able to go there for so long and then to finally get there at the end of last season and go consistently this season is just, I don't know, you didn't really, it's definitely, you know, that cliche of you don't know what you got till it's gone, but, you know, it's been great to be back watching football, and I don't think I'll ever take for granted being able to go and sit in my seat and watch Yeovil Town again, really, because it was quite depressing to not go. So yeah, that's been a highlight. And in the crystal ball, well, we're still on, what day are we on now of Scott Priestnell's deadline?
plus 22.
Treble figures nearly now, aren't we?
Yeah, we know, well, we assume that Simmel are still working on things. They've not come out since Julian Jenkins' tweet. So the crystal ball says something's got to happen, surely. Something needs to happen.
I know it's between Christmas and New Year, but that was a long 7 days, wasn't it? That was a long 7-day deadline.
I bet Scott Priestnell's missed
Tuesday
day.
Or Sunday. Yeah, I bet he has missed bin day, definitely, more than once.
It's almost like it was a load of old shites, but his deadline almost.
I bet he don't even do bin day himself.
Telling me he's got the money to pay someone to do it, because I don't think so.
He does do bin days, he just does someone else's bin days.
Right, lads, thank you very much for your time, and I'd just like to say a big thank you to everyone who has been listening to us this year and reading the website and sending us messages and everything. It's all been massively appreciated by myself and by Ben and Dave. We're going to carry on the hard work. Sorry, lads. We've got to do it next year as well. And we'll keep bringing you Yeovil Town stuff even more this year, I suppose.
Ian, can we say thank you to you as well?
No.
Because Dave and I wouldn't have bothered to do any of this if it weren't for you, mate. So thank you to you as well for busting the whip and yeah, doing all of the doing everything for us, because this is your brainchild. This is your baby. This was your thing of, no, let's get a daily blog. No, let's get all the side of space. No, let's get all the photos. No, let's do all this. And we're just the minions. We're just the wrenches. You are the monkey. We are the wrenches.
You are more than minions, and I refuse to accept your thanks.
Well, I appreciate it.
That is the spirit of the season for you, isn't it? You can stick your thank you.
No, but seriously, thank you to everyone who does still listen. It's still baffling. It's absolutely baffling that people still listen, lads. Can you all stop and we can all just pretend this has all gone away? So thank you. I do appreciate it. It keeps me going, if nothing else.
And I'm not grateful at all.
Cheers, everyone. See you in the new year.
Happy New Year. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Glovers Cast Quiz. We are joined once again by our reigning champion, Mr. Craig McCann. Craig.
Another good evening.
How are you doing? Do you have a good Christmas?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
Good stuff. And his challenger in the, you can pick red or blue corner, whichever you prefer. The northeast corner, I understand, is Robin Batchelor.
Hi, guys. Thanks very much for having me on. Representing the northeast Glovers. I think there's only one of us, so... Yeah, I'm taking the title as principal spokesperson, I think.
Principal spokesperson. That's a smaller contingent of supporters than the Northern Glovers. We try to be inclusive between the Northwest and Yorkshire in the Northeast. I'm not sure where Yorkshire fits in all that, to be honest with you, but somewhere in the middle. But right, okay, well, welcome, Robin. We will get underway then with our three former Yeovil Town players, and the theme for tonight is final match heroes. These three are all players who have scored in a final match of a Yeovil Town season. Now, Robin, you told me that your time supporting Yeovil began around 2007. Am I right?
That is right. Yeah, I think I did one in about 05, 06. Okay. And then,
we weren't expecting to remember one then. Game.
Yes,
from,
it
was, from that long ago.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I've tried to keep it within that range. So there's another little clue for you. Right. Okay. So here we go. I was born in Enfield in North London in September 1990 and joined the youth team at Tottenham Hotspur as a 16-year-old. I was top scorer in Spurs Academy with 14 goals in 26 matches in the 2007-08 season and made my first team debut in a UEFA Cup tie against NEC Nijmegen in 2008 and played again in the same competition against Shakhtar the next, earning myself a new contract at Spurs.
Is that?
Oh, it was John Obika. He got there. Was that what you're going to say, Robin?
I was going in Andros Townsend, so the other third lone contingent.
Well, yeah. I was gonna go. The next line was March 2009. I was brought into Hewish Park as an 18-year-old alongside a winger called Andros Townsend. So that would have given it away, wouldn't it? There we go. Right. Okay. 1-0. Okay, so can you remember when Obika scored? Final game of the season? You'll be doing well if you do.
Oh, I can't remember. It was a game.
2011 against Carlisle on the final game of the 2010-11 season. Okay, right. So 1-0 to Craig. Here's the second one. I was born in Blyth in May 1992 and grew up supporting Newcastle United, where Alan Shearer was my idol. I made it through the youth setup at St James's Park, but was released at the age of 11 and played youth football before being spotted by a scout for Darlington whilst playing for Blyth Spartans. I made my debut for Darlington, then a League Two club, at the age of 18 with financial issues off the pitch, ravaging the club's playing staff, and we were eventually relegated out the league. My performances in the conference quickly earned attention of the Premier League, and I ended up joining Fulham for a reported £350,000 fee at the end of the 2010-11 season. Spent my first year in the club's reserve. In September 2012, I joined Yeovil Town on a month youth loan deal, making my debut in a game at Preston North End, where I scored an own goal in the 86th minute and went on to score my first senior goal a minute later. Despite that, I became a regular in Gary Johnson's side, playing alongside Byron Webster in the heart of defence. Dan Byrne is the right answer. Yes, we don't need to guess which game, final game of the season, he scored in, do we?
Or was it James Hayter?
Ah, right. Not James Hayter, no.
I was gonna say
when it got Newcastle, I was expecting you to jump straight in there with, you know, northeast connections and all of that.
I was thinking Ben Tozer had a spell, but Newcastle at some point, but was a bit of a giveaway.
Kevin Gould did as well, didn't we? We had him the other week, though. I think Kevin Gould, but yeah. Right, okay, so 1-0, final contender. I was born in Bishop Stortford in June 1986 and was a revelation in the youth team at Ipswich Town, where I was in the academy. I made my first team debut as a 16-year-old in March 2003, coming off the bench in an East Anglia derby against Norwich. Not Ed Opson, but that is a good shout. Right, that keeps you out for the next paragraph. I'll call you back in, Craig. Which Tractor Boys won 2-0. The following season, I became the youngest player to score a hat-trick with a treble win, a 4-1 home win over Watford, where I was paired alongside Darren Bent. Okay, Craig, you're back in. We're going to say
Bowditch.
That's
it. It is Dean Bowditch. You're absolutely right. Dean Bowditch is the correct answer. Blimey. Right, okay, so we've got a new champion who's won the very popular Yeovil Town Who Am I variation of this quiz. And now, just because it's the coming to the end of the year and into a new one, I'm going to change it up. So from next week, in the 2022 quizzes, we will be doing something that's a little bit more trivia based. And with the help of our historical oracle, Mr. Nigel Dyson, we're going to be coming up with some Yeovil Town questions, some of which might date back beyond 2007, but some of which probably will be very much within 2007. So, Robin, we will see you back here next Thursday. Keep your diary free, and we'll give that a go and see if we can find a competitor to take you on. Craig, hard knocks, but good work. That was three wins, wasn't it? Count the one over cleverly as a half. Yeah, exactly. We'll call it 2.5 then, as one of them was against Cleves. Yeah. Well, rightio. Okay, gents. Well, happy new year to you both. And we will we'll speak to you next week, Robin.
And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
There's Lindegaard making Forrest backpedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris. He's found him via the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil. Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Madden, after just 6 minutes, gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott. Goal!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.